The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Micro News for Friday, the 16th of May, 2025. At least it's 2026 then. It's been a good day, end of the week, Friday. And it's been a good day, hasn't it? A good week, I mean, for markets generally. You know, a lot of small-cap, micro-cap stocks have bounced. Some of them will be sustainable rises, of course, if they're growing in revenue and profits. Others, maybe not. They've just had a relief rally, pretty much. And it's because of Trump. You know, I find the guy fascinating, but equally, I find him infuriating. He's an idiot, wrapped up in a massive ego. And so, that, you know, that what he did... the global economy. Well, it's not going to improve, is it, from here? So I do believe the American markets especially, it's a relief bounce, but I do think we're going to head into a downtrend. And the only way to protect yourself against that is by companies that are growing, their revenue profits at a good value. There are a lot of crap sort of story stocks on AIM. Well, probably this will be a bounce. It won't be a sustained recovery. Because let's be honest, how can the global economy do better than last year when the cost of trade internationally has gone up, which will cost more. And of course, that means you'll sell less. So the prices will go up and growth will come down. So regardless of what's happening at the moment, and if you look back at the S&P, for example, it had a massive bounce back when it last crossed, but back when you last had a death cross, which was back in... 2022. Now, it rallied, okay, we hit the top of the market in January 22. The death cross sort of happened, which is the 50-day moving average crossing down over the 200-day moving average, happened in March. And then, even though the share price dropped or the index dropped to 4,100, it then rallied over the next month to 4,600, way above the 200-day moving average, and then started to roll over again. I do believe that's the same thing that's going to happen here to the S&P. I believe it's going to roll over, because how can it hit new highs when there's going to be less growth globally? The cost of, import and exporting will go up. I don't think it will. Anyway, I've been looking around. There's not much in the way of macro news, apart from billionaires fall as King rises in latest Sunday Times rich list. I always find this quite fascinating. So the number of billionaires has fallen while King Charles's personal wealth has jumped to equal former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and wife Akshata Murthy. If you put a bit of an accent on it, which will work, so I don't know if I've said it correctly. Akshata. Yes, apparently, in the past year, the King's wealth has grown by 30 million to 640 million, increasing his rank 20 places to 238 with Sunak and Murthy. Well, do you know what? At least Sunak and Murthy have worked for it, haven't they? Or their parents have. What has Charles done for it? It's ridiculous. And do you know what? A large part of that was because he inherited his mother's wealth. And do you know what? He did not pay inheritance tax on the fortune she left due to an exemption. This would have charged a standard 40% on assets above a threshold. So... it's not like he has to do anything, is it? He can own his products and people just buy it because he's been born Prince Charles. What is the achievement in that? So he shouldn't actually be, he should be in the rich list, just to highlight the ridiculousness of him getting lots of money for doing nothing. And he goes around saying, it's very hard for people across the living crisis. Why can't you help out then, Charles? In fact, why can't he help the markets? Why don't he invest some of it? I would love it if Charles became an AIM investor and tweeted about it. I've just chucked a tumbler of money into UK oil and gas. In fact, he wouldn't go for oil and gas, would he? Stocks. I would love it if he went for just, the highest risk story stocks, narratives and just nonsense like that and pumped them on Twitter. Well, it's nothing less than what Sir Elon Musk does, is it, with Dogecoin and all that stuff. And he's the richest guy in the world, so, he was. I don't know if he is now. So there's that. The interesting thing, this is the top sort of five. At five, Edan Offa. I'm reading this from the BBC. They don't tell you what these people do. Edan Offa is at 20 billion. Sir James Dyson and family, 20.8 billion. So know what he does. Sir Leonard Blavatnik is a Ukrainian-born American, British-American businessman who built up a sizable net worth, almost 26 billion. So this is for people just basically have residency in the UK or dual nationality. I would like to see a list of British-born, wouldn't you? Just to see, I mean, I assume Dyson would be number one then. Above Leonard Blatnick is David and Simon Rubin and family. What do they do? They are property and technology. And above that is Gopi Hinduja and family, the 35.5 billion. And it's quite inspirational, their story. The brothers, one of them died, began their careers in their father's textile and trading businesses in Bombay in India and Tehran, Iran. Sale of food commodities, onions and potatoes, iron ore from India to Iran. They bought British Leyland and Gulf Oil and the establishment of banks in Switzerland. It's quite amazing. You have to understand that all these people on this list, apart from Prince Charles, are business owners. And that's not a surprise, I suppose, but I keep saying, you know, if you want to make money, you have to own a successful business, which is very hard to do. It takes up a lot of your time, a lot of your effort, most of your life. Or to build up your own wealth, not to be in the Times Rich List, but to build up your own wealth, you can invest or have a share of a successful business. But, what does Indian Offer do? It doesn't say. Among other notable figures to make it on the list were Formula One champion Sir Lewis Hamilton, David and Victoria Beckham, Sir Elton John. Dua Lipa, 29, is the youngest person to be included in the sub-list of richest Britons aged under 40. She's, it says here on BBC, raked at 34. Come on, BBC, surely you have enough staff. You can spell check that on ChatGPT now. Just write it in the Google Doc. Ranked at 34 with an estimated wealth of 115 million. Harry Styles, 31, got 225 million. Ed Sheeran, 370 million. Wow. There we are. Well done to those people. You know, done it off their own back. Didn't need mummy to just hand down a fortune without inheritance tax. God, it annoys me because I believe that, and that list largely says it, you know, with hard work and with a bit of smarts, you can make it some way, and it's fair for everyone. In a capitalist society, you can do that. You can improve yourself and do very well. But there's one exception to the rule there, isn't there, where you're just born into wealth. And you just look at, I mean, how much money does Prince Charles actually have to spend? If he goes into a pub, I can't imagine he has to put his hand in his pocket. Why does he need the money? Just invest it in British business. Do something with it that's constructive to help British people. So there we are. That's exceptions to the rule. You know, they have a family there above the law, above democracy, above any inheritance tax rules that just will always, you know, accumulate money, full stop. Anyway. Sorry about my rant, as I get older, I become less and less a fan of the royal family. I just think it's so, you know, it's not a democracy where a family like that sits at the top above the laws and the rules. And it should be a democracy in some way. Sorry about that. Let's get the microcap database. How many companies today? I covered... In fact, I did a few more today, actually, recently. But today's news, there's one, two, three, four, five. Five companies. So first and foremost, Character Group, CCT, engaged in design, development, and international distribution of toys, games, and giftware. What did they come out with today? They came out with a half-year report here. Revenue's down 8%. Pre-tax profit increased, actually, this is the 29th of February, by 42% to 3.1 million versus 2.2. They've got net cash of 16 million, which increased by 23% from 12.9. Free cash flow in down 10% to 5.4. But it's not bad, but you have to understand, you know, this is before any of the tariffs kicked in. Okay? You know, the chaos of tariffs that Trump has created. And the company imports around 20% of its goods from the US to China. So the company has pulled guidance due to disruption. I think it's just worth waiting to see how this affects them. But it could be an opportunity. If they, where are they today? If, I mean, if it drop, overly drop, let's have a look. I mean, it's not a quality business, really, just importing toys from, you know, China and America. But they are on a low here. And what's the PE on this? If they let's have a look. So there's no forecast, but on a current PE, I've run about 9. So not cheap. Maybe an opportunity if they come up with an update here. Okay, as kind of, I wouldn't jump into it though. Let's be honest. Just, you're going to think, what do they have anything unique? Do they have licenses on certain toys? Maybe they do. I don't know. I think they may have a license on certain branded toys. I don't know. Next, E-Energy. This is a market cap of 19 million, pretty much. They did have some debt, but they sold the company, so that's going to be gone now. Half-year results. Oh, no, weren't that impressive. But the forecasts are looking better. 2025, in fact, 24 is not looking too good. They're looking at doing 27 million top line with a £500,000 loss. That's an improvement on the 6 million loss in 23, mind. Now, today, they've come out with a £100 million partnership with Redaptive. And the share price has shot up. Like, I think some people are thinking, it's like £100 million they've got. Contract. It's not a contract. It's just, it's funding. So what E-Energy do is they are energy as a service. For example, they'll refit a school, for example, with all new LED lighting. There'll be no upfront costs, so they'll shoulder that cost on their balance sheet or from a funder or from debt they've arranged, like from NatWest Bank or something. And then the company will pay them back on monthly installments. Of course, there's a bit of debt there. Now, what they've got here with Redaptive is a sort of fund, pre-funding, up to 100 million. So theoretically, it should help them win bigger contracts, as funding will not be an issue for Redaptive-approved e-energy customer projects across all client sectors in the UK. Of course, E-Energy will still have to win contracts here. This is not a contract. This is just a funding arrangement. So this does not, as yet, have any impact on forecasts whatsoever, because, you know, it just removes funding restrictions. But I would say it's worth watching future contract wins and trading updates to see how positive this is for the company. See if it does help them win new contracts. If they need a certain level of funding to, you know, take on contracts, it'd be interesting to see there. But nevertheless, it's a positive step. But let's be honest, as yet, it makes no difference to the forecast whatsoever, even though the share price is up by 17%. I don't know if some people think this is, ooh, 100 million they've got. No, they haven't. They haven't got anything yet. They'll go to the, you know, Redaptive with each project. If Redaptive approve of it, then they say, okay, that project you need to save 3 million or 5 million, whatever you need. It's not going to be one big project, 100 million. It'll be lots of small projects, I assume. And on a piecemeal basis, Redaptive will say yes or no to certain projects. So, but it will help, of course. What's the market cap there? Yeah, they're looking to be profitable, they say, forecasts here. In 2025, so it'll be 28 million of revenue, 2.6 million of pre-tax profit. That would put them on a PE of about 12. It's not bad if they hit those forecasts. Worth a look. I would let it settle down after this, though. I think people are just thinking, 100 million, woo, see that figure, 100 million, woo, woo, that's loads. Then my cap's only 20. That's not revenue, it's just funding, possible funding. That's maximum. Next, Solid State Group, a leading value-added electronics group supplying commercial, industrial, and military markets with double components. Sorry, not double. Durable components, assemblies, and manufacturing systems. Now, they had a huge profit warning recently, didn't they? They fell off a cliff. They've never been cheap, this company. But let me look at the chart here. On 14th of November, they were like £2.06 a share. And on the 15th of November, when they announced the profit warning, they dropped to 135. And they've been sort of climbing up here, but I think it's been overdone, to be honest. So they are 110 million EV, 105 enterprise value. So they've announced today a US 5.2 million IoT, Internet of Things, contract award. It's a follow-on contract, they said. When is this? The delivery of the contract will commence Q2 financial year 25 through 26. Even so, there's no broker out today. Didn't see any, so I'm assuming this doesn't affect the forecast pretty much. It was in the forecast. It's expected. Now, for 25, they're expected to do 124 million top line. This is down from 163 last year. It's down 24%. And they're going to expect to do a profit before tax of 1.4 million, down from 12.1 million in 24. But even in 2026, they're expected or forecast to do 145 million. So that's 17% growth on 25, with a profit before tax of 4.5. That would still put them on a PE of 36 at the current share price. So they're not cheap, you know? So I'm thinking people are jumping on this for recovery. But unless they win some big contract, it's not cheap here. So, I'm not going to be jumping on that. What else? Starfline contract win. Now, this is an interesting one. Starfline, this is obviously, as far as dog sectors go, or sectors, you know, overlooked or people tell you to forget about, this is, in the sense, this, you know, building, house building, all that stuff, and retailing and recruitment are three sectors that have taken a hammering. Starfline, even before this, I didn't sort of believe the numbers really, but even before this contract, they weren't doing, the forecasts were quite good. They've fallen quite a bit. So they have a market cap of 32 million, enterprise value of 22. So they've got, like, you know, about 10 million in net cash, pretty much. And even for 2024, they did 14% top-line growth. Now, the margins have got very, very thin. £992 million top-line, up from 871, but the profit before tax only 5 million. So they literally got profit before tax margins of half of 1%. Nevertheless, today they came out with this news, and the brokers are describing it as the largest ever contract win for Starfline, and they believe the contract could be worth 300 million potentially over 3 years. And they've increased their forecast for 25, 26, 27 by 12%, 46%, and 41%. That's the earnings per share, respectively. And they've got a price target of 60 pence here. It's easy to overlook this kind of company because, like I said, the margins aren't that good. But there is growth and there's value there. Because if you look at where they are at the moment, they're in a current PE, or they were just before this news came out, of less than 8. And looking forward to next year, they're expected to grow to now profit for tax, expected to grow by 20% to 6 million. Which still puts them on a PE of 7.2. I mean, it is up by 20% today, so 20% more than that, I suppose. So it's still less than 8. And they've got cash. So you think, okay, is it worth taking a chance? They've got plenty of cash. It's not like they need to go back to the market to raise money. This contract with this food supply, is it food supply chain company? UK's leading food and drink supply chain management and logistics providers. So they're a significant strategic partnership. Initial 2-year agreement with 1-year extension. Yeah, to supply the labour for that company. So it's an interesting contract, and the forecasts are quite good, considering they're in a really awful sector. They're quite resilient. So I think it's, you know, just looking on the growth and value front, regardless of the sector. I mean, you can say what you want about a sector. You can have guesses about a sector. You can make judgments about it, but it's a survey of one, pretty much. All you can do is look from the top down, or bottom up, I mean, of companies and say, well, are all companies in the sector going to be losers? Or will there be some companies taking market share and winning contracts? And then all you can do is look at their figures and think, that's not bad, you know, especially in the sector in. I mean, let's be honest, it's not bad anyway, the growth they've had. So if you're going to judge a company off its figures, not on your opinion of the sector, when none of us are experts. Well, some of you may be experts in certain sectors, of course. You may work in those sectors. But there again, if you work for a recruitment company, you may say it's very tough. But Staffline don't seem to be, you know, having it tough. So your company may be, but theirs obviously not. They're doing quite well. So there's a fair possibility they could be gaining market share. So like I said, the best time to buy a company is when everything in that sector is gloomy. I mean, if you buy a company that's doing well in that sector, that's been dragged down on sentiment, then you can obviously do well. Anyway, so it's a bit of a surprise, this Staffline. It has jumped today, 20%. And lastly, another one actually, good is that two companies that are both in the microcap league, because they're profitable, is Volvere. I don't know how you pronounce that. Volvere. It seems like you should pronounce it with some French accent. VLE is ticker. They've got a market cap of 45 million, enterprise value of 21. I always like that. So they've got cash of 25 and a little bit at 670 grand. They don't pay a dividend. Are they buying back shares? They may be buying back shares. But they're an industrial holding company that invests in acquires companies with acquired growth capital. And I think they have one operating company called Shire Foods. I have no idea what Shire Foods are. Is it just foods for Shire horses? Let me have a look. Let me Google it. Shire Foods. God, good come on Google, right? It's like Shire Foods East Anglia, Shire Foods manufacturer. They've got 2.8 stars out of 5. Shire Foods East Anglia have got 4.2 out of 5. So I'm not sure which one that is. But Shire Foods, on Google search, number one pie manufacturers UK. Oh, now you're talking. I do love a good pie. Do you? Making delicious British pies for over 50 years. Is that them? Shire Foods, 1970? As a renowned pie manufacturer, we're passionate about all things pastry, from frozen savoury products to tasty vegan, vegetarian. Oh, I tell you what, they do look nice. Have I ever had one of those? I do like... in fact, you know, a couple of days ago, I said to my wife, do you know what we haven't had for a while? Pie and chips. Midlands and Proud. Is that where they're from? Let's have a look at the history here. I'm looking at pictures. There's lots of pictures on the site. They started supplying Morrisons in the 1990s. Meant further capacity required and we continue to grow. Oh, yeah, they are. New investment. In 2012, Volvere invested in our pie company, which helped us grow further, and we allowed our pasties, pies, and sausage rolls to reach more people's plates throughout the country. I may ask my wife if we can see any of those in the shops, those Shire pies, because I'm not joking, the results are very good. Essentially, I didn't know that. I looked at this company was in the microcap league, and I knew they did well half-year results, but I didn't know they made pies. I may be, you know, taste the product. They're obviously doing very well. Growth from humble, 1970 they started. We even invented football's famous chicken balti pie, which sold at over 60 stadiums throughout the country. That's amazing. Shire Foods. So that's all they do is pies. It's Shire. Oh, hang on. They got... well, is that it? Yeah, pies, sausage rolls, pastries, vegan vegetables, party food. That's all they do is pies and pastries. Wow. Anyway, sorry, I've gone off. I was looking at the pictures there, pies. I was looking at pie porn. So the full year results this year, today, and these are to December 31st. So top line grew by 14% to 49 million from 42.9. Pre-tax profit up 74% to 6.3 million from 3.6. Cash of 24.3 million up from 21. Free cash flow was down a little bit from 5.6 to 5.1. There's no forecast, so they don't have any broker coverage. So what I've done for forecasts on my website is literally up their top line by 10% and continue with the margins. So I could be conservative if people are loving pies and their pies are good. But they're on a PE. Yeah, they're on a forecast PE of less than 9. Especially when you consider, I mean, a PE, of course, it's just the market cap. Doesn't consider the cash. So if you put it on an EV earnings basis, just the enterprise value, you know, divided by net profit, it'd be 5.2. That's even better value. So my forecast may prove conservative, but I think Volvir, it's a bit opaque because there's no forecast or anything. But they are looking around, they just said, for other food investments. I think you've got to be careful there. I mean, the Shire Food has obviously done very well. It's very hard to find a winning formula like that. So they have to be very selective because it's going to, you know, obviously drag the performance of Shire Foods down if they don't find a better company. But nevertheless, they are doing very well. And they, even though the share price has risen quite a bit over the last... let's have a look at the share price here. VLE. Yeah, the share price has wow, look at that. It sort of bottomed in around about 2022 at £9.10 a share. It's now £21 a share. But this year alone, it's gone from, I think, £16 to £21. So nice rise today. It did spike up and come back down, but I think there's some good value there. And but you can't see what the growth's going to be going forward because there's no forecast. There's not much visibility there. But nevertheless, it seems like a good company. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Sorry I've rambled on a bit. I'm in my office. It's the afternoon. It's quite hot. I've just been for a dog walk. When I say dog walk, I don't mean just walking like a dog. I mean I've been walking my dog. You know, I don't mean I haven't been around sniffing other dogs' backsides and stuff and weeing outside. Yeah, have a nice weekend. It's going to be a nice weekend, hopefully, is where you are weather-wise. And I will not be watching the Eurovision camp contest. I'm not a big fan of that at all. I can't see... It's amazing, isn't it? People just going mad about play rubbish songs. I just don't see it. Mainly men, middle-aged men. I just think, grow up a bit. Well, I suppose not. If you're enjoying yourself, you're enjoying it. You know, as long as you're enjoying yourself and not hurting anyone else, that's fine. I just do not get it at all. And the thing is, we prove via sales that the British music industry, you know, punches way above its weight, way above any European country. You know, we have international artists that sell internationally around the world. How many French or Spanish or Israeli or artists have you seen selling around the world regularly? You know, they don't. And yet, we come to Eurovision... They don't vote us in. So our industry is head and tails, or head and shoulders, and tails, head, shoulders, and tails, way above Europeans. So that what bugs me as well. I'm thinking, I just feel like, what are you talking about? We are experts in the music industry compared to you lot. How dare you vote us down? How very dare you? Who? It's that and just the sort of, you know, camp celebration of really mediocre songs. I just don't get it. Over the top, really, you know, over the top celebration of mediocre songs. I'd prefer to sit outside in the garden, have a beer. Okay, that's it. That's why, you know, everyone to their own, I suppose, isn't it? So as long as people enjoy themselves there. That's it. Thank you. Speak to you next week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Please do your own research.